I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at WTGrantFoundation.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's programs comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our guest today is the host of the Midnight Special, Rich Warren. The Midnight Special is a program of folk music and humor that's long been a staple of Chicago radio station WFMT. That's where it originated. It's also heard on many public radio stations around the country, including this one. And we hope you'll join us for the Midnight Special Saturday afternoons here on AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, or online at will.illinois.edu. Our guest, Rich Warren, majored in history at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And while he was here as a student, he hosted a program called Changes at WPGU. When he left Champaign-Urbana, he joined the staff of WFMT, and in 1983, he became the co-host of the Midnight Special. Now the solo host, he makes his home back here in Champaign County. He's back. He's been back for quite some time now. He's often, though, back in Chicago hosting the concert series Folk Stage. In addition to those duties, he writes regularly on folk music and electronics. He's with us this afternoon to talk about folk music and to share some music with us. We also want you to know that you're invited to join the conversation with your questions and comments. If you'd like to join us, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and 800-222-WILL. Good to see you. It's been a while.
Great to be here.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Today we're going to do something just a little bit different. We're going to go back in time with folk music. What have you got in mind?
Well, you know, usually I bring to you the latest and greatest in contemporary singer-songwriters, which are under that category of folk music. But folk music is a little bit different than what people consider it. It got a sort of a strange name in the 1960s during the great folk boom, or some people refer to it the great folk scare. Folk music goes back 1,000 years in our culture. Now, of course, there's folk music in every culture. It's part of a peasant society, and that's what the academics define it as. It's the step up from tribal culture when people coalesce in the villages and into farmers, agricultural societies rather than hunter-gatherers. They started creating a communal music, which became folk music. And this was, of course, in the days before there were newspapers or media, mass media of any sort. So folk music filled in what the News Gazette does today, basically. It was the local newspaper. It was how you found out your history, how you found out a course of current events. If somebody would write a song about an event and somebody else would sing it, and pretty soon families would learn it and sing it and pass it on. And some of these songs have survived. Many of the great British ballads and Scottish ballads survived because a Harvard professor in the late 19th century collected all of them and put them in books. Because a lot of it's dying out now, the originators. There is no folk culture in the academic sense any longer because of mass media. So that some of these have been preserved for us, and some of these have been preserved in the Appalachian Mountains in the U.S., where in these hollers and mountain valleys where people didn't get a lot of communication, where there was very poor radio reception, where they couldn't afford Victrolas, they kept singing these songs. So some of these songs came over from the British Isles and settled in these valleys and were pretty pristine until the 1950s or 60s. And before anybody gets upset, of course, there's I'm going to be talking mainly about the Celtic, Scots, Anglo folk music tradition. Of course, there's a terrific African-American folk music tradition and all the ethnic musics that have come to America who have become part of this folk music tradition from all over the world. So I'm not being exclusive or saying one is better than the other. I'm just saying that what we've popularly called folk music is generally this Anglo-Scottish Celtic tradition that seems to be very popular even today, which got its big boom in the 1960s. So that's where we're going to go. And we're going to go back and try to listen to some of the older songs and also talk about sort of what makes a folk song. I'm not going to define folk music. That's the scariest and most foolhardy thing you can try to do. But I thought I'd play some examples and give some listeners the background.
Well, why don't we start out with something? Where would you like to start?
Well, I'd like to start with two people whose voices you'll definitely recognize. I think there's no need to introduce the artist, but I will say that one of them is a singer of folk songs and the other is a folk singer. However, one of the songs is a folk song and the other is not a folk song. So let's just hear this and you'll see what I mean.
Okay.
In a cavern, in a canyon, excavating for a mine, lived a miner, 49er, and his daughter, Clementine. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you are lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry Clementine. Light she was and like a fairy, and her shoes were number 9. Herring boxes without topses, sandals were for Clementine. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you are lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry Clementine. Drove she ducklings to the water every morning just at 9. Stubbed her toe upon a splinter, fell into the foaming brine. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you are lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry Clementine. Ruby lip above the water, blowing bubbles soft and fine, but alas, I was no swimmer, so I lost my Clementine. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you are lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry
Clementine. We do know that a shot or two was heard from some back room. Then there was a silence in the place. Just one more trip to town, but all his chips were down. They found Cody lying on his face.
Softly calling
Clementine. So buddies make a monument to lay down at his head. Sure you hate to leave your pal behind. Mother, help your daughter put her wedding dress away, 'cause Cody won't be riding back this time.
To his darling
Clementine.
So, of course, that was Pete Seeger and Johnny Cash.
And what will surprise most people, and of course Pete would certainly agree with this, the late Archie Green, who was a professor here at the University of Illinois for a dozen years back in the 60s, taught folk music on campus, and that's how I learned this comparison, is that Johnny Cash is a folk singer. That is, he learned a lot of songs from his parents, from his relatives, from his ancestors. And he heard them via the oral tradition, that people sang them to him, and he learned these songs. In fact, there are a few albums out of Johnny Cash singing traditional American folk songs. Johnny, of course, went on to other pursuits rather than being a folk singer in the sense that we call a folk singer, whereas Pete Seeger was the son of a well-known Harvard professor who was a musicologist, and Pete learned almost all of his music from recordings, from records. And Pete will be the first to say that he's not a folk singer, he's a singer of folk songs. And, of course, the version of Clementine that Pete sang is the traditional song, whereas the one Johnny sang sort of riffs off the traditional song, but he wrote that edition. So I'd like to, it sort of opens things up that what we always assume about folk music may or may not be true. Yeah. There's a whole variety of things out there. And, of course, Johnny Cash married June Carter, who was part of the Carter family. And the Carter family, especially A.P. Carter, took a lot of traditional music and rewrote it to be popular to the masses and became probably the most seminal and popular folk music group in the country in the 1920s and 30s and certainly altered the landscape of folk music. But the Carter family tradition evolved into what we call today country music more than folk music. So it's a very complex scheme out there of what our history is in this thing called folk music.
And some people would say country music is folk music.
A lot of it is.
Yeah.
And it just depends on who's doing the interpreting or defining. So I thought it was a neat thing. And Pete has four or five CDs out called American Favorite Songs, where he goes through the entire collection of songs that everybody in America should know that are traditional songs and recorded them back in the early 1950s. So,
Well, when I was listening to these two singers and these two songs, which are different songs, of course, and I was recalling that as a child, I sang Clementine, but I don't think I sang all those verses that Pete did. And I'm wondering, what did we sing? Of course, I remember the chorus, but I don't think we sang those verses that Pete sang. I wonder what we sang in school.
Well, we sang about five of those verses, but not all of them. Pete researched everything he did and tried to find as many verses as possible. There's a song I'll be playing a little later if we have time that is one of the great, great Scots English ballads. And Michael Cooney, who is a contemporary interpreter of folk music, went out and researched the song and came up with, I forget how many verses, I think it was 55 verses. It takes 22 minutes to sing. And there are no extant versions of that song anywhere that have all the verses. Because every folk song, being a folk song, gets changed every time somebody sings it. So there are different verses depending on where you grew up and who you knew and what family you learned it from. And there's this set of books, it's a five-volume that I think is back in print now, it's also on CD-ROM, called The Child Ballads. And that's Francis Child, this Harvard professor who collected these ballads. He didn't worry about the music very much. He was more concerned with the words. But virtually every one of these great English ballads, he has 5, 6, 7, 10 variants of each ballad. And some of them are dramatically different from each other. So that's something I'll be presenting at the public library. On one of the reasons we're talking is because I'm going to be giving a two-hour presentation on folk music this coming Wednesday, the 26th of August at 7 at the Champaign Public Library. And I will be playing examples, and also I'll hand out the lyrics. Since the child ballads are in public domain, I can legally copy the lyrics and hand them out. And somebody in history may want to collect royalties, but it's, you know, 1,000 years ago. I'm sorry, we're not going to go that far. So, any event, I hope that people will come and participate and hear these folk songs. I'll have a lot more than I'll be able to play on your show today.
Yeah, okay, so that's next Wednesday, August 26th at 7 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. You'll be there. And sounds like a great program. What was your introduction to these old ballads, the old ballads of the British Isles?
It's funny. It was sort of, I guess, listening to the Midnight Special as a young teenager and hearing some of them and being fascinated. And during the when I came to college at U of I, listening to when I was preparing Changes, I'd get all the new releases. And I think there's one I have here that maybe we'll have time to play. I recall getting a John Renbourn record. Now, John is a contemporary interpreter of traditional music, and he sang with Pentangle. And he had this song called Willie O'Winsbury. And I listened to it, and I raced over to the main library here, and I found the child ballad collection, looked up all the child ballads, and started reading them because the poetry was so beautiful. And the story was so incredible. And I just was, that way I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked at that point that there was something very special about this music. There's something magic about it because this music goes back so far, and yet the poetry still, it's like Shakespeare. It's beautiful. And in fact, Shakespeare stole some of his plays and plot lines from traditional songs. There's an ancient 15-minute long ballad called King Lear and His Three Daughters that preceded Shakespeare. So this really goes back, and it's part of this long stream that we're all part of, at least all of us, you know, who are interested in this Anglo-Irish Scottish culture.
Okay. Well, this is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guest this afternoon is the host of the Midnight Special, Rich Warren. Listeners, if you'd like to join us with a question, a comment, feel free to do so. We'd love to hear from you. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, how much do we really know about the oldest folk music? Are there, before some of the people who took the time to collect it in books, had it been written down anywhere?
Not really. No. People, because almost by its very nature, it just didn't get written down. Folk music became superseded in the early 19th century by the penny broadside, where people had access to cheap printing for the first time. So they'd write a song, or they'd find a song and write it down and then print it and put it up on walls like advertising posters, which is called a broadside. And this is often used for political injustices or political music. That's another aspect. There's so many people equate contemporary folk music with political music, and that was not the case of the original ballads, although a lot of them referred to misdeeds by the monarchy, by royalty. There's always seemed to be royalty involved in some of these songs, and the duke was doing this to somebody he shouldn't be doing, or whatever, or the queen did this. But this was the newspaper of the masses before there was printing, and then it evolved into the penny broadside and then to the penny newspaper. And that changed everything, because now you could take an event that happened and write it down, and everybody, thousands of people, could share it at once in the same day, which folk music, that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Somebody would go to a hanging in the year 1300 and make a poem out of it, write it down, and sing it to their brother or their townspeople or whatever, and then somebody would leave town and go to the next town and sing this song. Do you know what happened in that town 2 weeks ago? And they'd sing the song, and pretty soon it would spread as merchants went around and said, hey, back and then, a month ago or a year ago, and pretty soon the whole historical part of it was lost, but the song continued. So there are true stories. They have researched a few of the folk songs and found events that actually are the original folk song. And some of the more obscure songs, there's one, if we have time to hear, called Not Him in Town, which is a nonsense song. It doesn't make any sense, but it seems to refer to the era of the plague, and that's probably what it's talking about, how everything just turned topsy-turvy during the plague years, and everything went crazy. And that song, and then Bob Dylan stole that melody for one of his songs. And that's another thing, is that A.P. Carter and Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan have all borrowed richly from the folk tradition. Almost all their melodies, original melodies, were taken from folk songs because these are tried and true. If the song, for example, We Shall Overcome, was part of original Black spiritual, and the way to perpetuate your music is take a melody that everybody knows and put new words to it because they can still hum the melody. This Land Is Your Land was taken from a traditional song. All these things were part of this folk tradition, and they'd borrow words or phrases or melodies and cobble together whole new songs. This has gone on throughout history as well.
Yeah, that has to have been going on from the get-go, because if I came to your community and sang you a song about what had happened back in my community, and then you took it, and maybe you'd embroider on it, or you'd say, well, I liked the tune, but I've got some different words
exactly,
to put to
exactly.
it. Exactly. So, it's not really stealing. It's, I don't know, creative license?
Yeah, that's folk music.
Okay, well, let's play something. Well, let's take a call. Okay. We've got a listener who's joining us now. So we'll talk to a listener and get them in here this afternoon. And then after we take this call, we'll play something else. Let's take a call now from a listener in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I just wrote down something so I don't take up a lot of time. I love your program on Saturday when you have folk songs, and I try to watch it, listen to it. And so thank you for that. And then I have a question. Let me turn this off. I saw on television, on WILL, that was going to be a program of the Pete Seeger birthday party, and I'd like to know when that is, if you know.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah,
we're here.
We're here.
I know
okay.
It's early September, and I think it's shortly after Labor Day, if I'm not mistaken.
Like a Friday night when they... Well, anyhow, that would be something to look forward to.
I know it'll be in patterns.
Yeah, right. I can't find it in this mess on my table.
Well, oh. September patterns.
September
right.
patterns.
Oh, good.
So you haven't missed it. That's the important thing.
I have an excuse. Yeah. Okay, and then just some other points. I lived in New York in the 50s and 60s, grew up there, so I went to lots and lots of hootenannies. And it would be, I remember R.T. Green, and I remember him in the auditorium bringing down a group from Chicago, and it was wonderful. And people joined in the singing, and that would be so nice as a revival, just to sing along.
Mm.
And just another point, I'm just going to rush mm-hmm. through this. I saw Leadbelly with his wife once at a concert, and that was a really wonderful privilege. It was in Union Hall on Astor Place, I think, 22 Astor Place, and that was just remarkable, singing with, and his wife sang along. Well, anyhow, those are some of the things I just thought about.
Okay, well, thanks for the call this afternoon.
As Pete Seeger always says, the whole purpose of his performance is to get people to sing along. That's, to him, the absolute essence of folk music, is to sing along, is to be part of the song. And Pete will not perform unless, like when I've recorded Pete in the past, he insists, no, you mic the audience, and just have a little mic for me and 12 mics for the audience, because that's the people doing the folk music. And I fully agree that that's really what keeps this music alive, is people singing it. And Leadbelly, I think, fortunately he's already famous today, but I think he's under-recognized in the sense that I think Leadbelly was probably a genius. And if he hadn't been a poor black man living in the social milieu that he did, that he would have been much more famous and much more wealthy, because he was an incredible man with music. He had a sense that very few people had about music. And in fact, the song Kiss is Sweeter Than Wine, we wouldn't have that song if Leadbelly hadn't heard some Irish singer at a club one night singing a song about a dead cow, which has this beautiful melody. And this Irishman's lamenting about his dead cow. And Leadbelly said, I can't make out those Irish words. They're nonsense to me. So he came up with some words, and he mumbled some of them because he couldn't quite figure out what he was going to do with this song. And then the Weavers heard it, and Lee Hayes and the group thought, Leadbelly's onto something here. We're going to polish up this song. And that became one of their biggest hits, was Kiss is Sweeter Than Wine, all from an Irish song about a dead cow, so called Drinnin' Do Drinnin'. So it's a wonderful chain of events. And Leadbelly was an incredibly important figure in the scene. And I always regret that he didn't have the opportunity he would have had today to be a more famous musician. And a point I would make, too, is that Woody Guthrie, I think if he had not been felled by his illness, you know, he lived until the mid-60s, late 60s. If he had survived healthy, I think he would have done the same thing that Bob Dylan did at Newport. He would have plugged in. Woody was not a purist. Woody was a great songwriter, but he also was very sensitive to the times. I mean, Woody studied Will Rogers. He studied A.P. Carter. He knew what made music popular, and he would have gone along with the times just like Dylan did. And so when Pete Seeger was a little bit stricken by the fact that Dylan plugged in, I think his friend Woody would have plugged in too. Woody was not a purist in that sense. That's my guess. I mean, I could, you know, obviously can't put words in his mouth or guitar cables in his hand.
Yeah.
But those are good points the listener made. And I thought we'd move on to just something else most people don't realize. Probably the song that launched the folk revival of the 60s, actually it was the late 50s, was the Kingston Trio doing Tom Dooley. Now, that's a true story. It did occur in the mountains, and it's pretty much a true story. But what people don't realize is the copyright battle that went on over that song, because the fellow named Frank Prophet, who was a traditional singer in the mountains singing that song, he's the one who sort of cobbled it together from tradition and made it the sort of the song we know today. And Frank Warner from living in New York at the time or somewhere up in the Northeast, went down and heard Frank Prophet sing it, and he made a few changes, and he brought it back up, and the Lomax brothers, the father and son, Lomax, Alan and John, also heard it, and they made their few changes, and they all raced to the copyright office, and poor Frank Prophet was sitting down there with nothing, living in a mountain hollow with minimal material goods, and then, of course, it got to the Kingston Trio, and they copyrighted it. And that raged on in court, I think, for 2 or 3 years until finally Frank Prophet got some royalties from the song. They all split it up. But I thought we'd play a little bit of Frank Prophet doing it and then show you how the Kingston Trio changed it.
Okay, very good.
Mm-hmm. Tom Dooley hang your head and cry. You kill little Larry Foster, poor boy, you're bound to die. You met her on the mountain, there you took her life. Met her on the hillside, you stopped her with a knife. Tom Dooley, oh, hang your head and cry. Kill little Larry Foster, poor boy, you're bound to die. This time tomorrow, reckon where I'll be. Down in Yander's Valley, hanging on a white oak tree. Hang your head, Tom Dooley, oh, hang your head and cry. Kill little Larry Foster, poor boy, you're bound to die.
This time tomorrow, reckon where I'll be. Hadn't it been for Grayson, I'd have been in Tennessee.
Well now, boy,
hang down.
Get a real sense of the difference there between the two.
Most of the story is the same, but the musical setting is quite different.
Yeah, it's really popped up.
Yeah, and that's what launched basically the folk boom. A nice, safe song about a murder in the mountains, nothing political there. Since the Weavers had been blacklisted earlier in the 50s for their political views, the Kingston Trio played it safe for their first couple of albums before they got politically involved. So that's just an example. And somebody else from the mountains who is probably the most famous American traditional singer, another interesting story, Jean Ritchie. And she has a beautiful voice, and she learned all her songs from her family's tradition. The Ritchie family goes way back in the mountains. The interesting thing is Jean Ritchie was awarded a Fulbright when she was a young woman and went to New York to study opera. And she thought she was going to be a professional opera singer. And when she got to New York, she realized all these songs that she had taken for granted with her family, these little ballads she'd been singing all her life, were what people wanted to hear. They didn't want to hear her sing opera. They wanted to hear her sing all these wonderful songs from her own family. So she decided that's what she was going to do the rest of her life, is perpetuate these wonderful songs. And said she had a very pretty voice. Not all traditional singers had a lovely voice, and she did, fortunately. Mm-hmm. And people like Jack Holzman, who founded Elektra Records, heard her and flipped out completely for her. And she's one of the very first artists on Elektra Records in the early days. And I thought we'd just play a little bit of this Jean Ritchie doing a traditional song from Britain as she heard it in the mountains.
In Nottingham Town, not a soul would look up, not a soul would look up, not a soul would look down, not a soul would look up, not a soul would look down, to show me the way to fair Nottingham Town. I rode a gray horse that is called a gray mare, gray mare. Gray mane and gray tail, green stripe down her back. There wanted her owner be what was coal black. She stood so still, she threw me to the dirt. She tore in my hide and bruised my shirt. From saddle to stirrup, I mounted a and on my ten toes I rode over the plain. Met the king and the queen and a company more, all walking behind and riding before. Come a stark-necked drummer, a beating a drum, with his hands in his bosom come marching along. I bought me a quart to drive gladness away and to stifle the dust, for it rained the whole day. Set down on a hard, hot, cold, frozen stone, 10,000 stood around me, and yet I was alone. Took my hat in my hands for to keep my head warm. 10,000 got drowned that never was born.
That's quite a tune.
Pretty spooky song, too. Yeah. Gives you the chills. And Bob Dylan borrowed that from Masters of War, that melody. So it's a melody that proved effective because he uses it quite well in that song of his. But this song, we're not quite sure what it refers to, but it seems to be from the plague. And, you know, things pick up verses. There are floating verses that come and go in these songs. And this seems to be an accumulation of opposites, of very dark images. So it's really hard to say. But that was Jean Ritchie, and she is certainly, I think if you had to pick the number one American traditional folk singer, she certainly would be there because she learned the songs from tradition, yet she has a beautiful voice as well.
Yeah, very expressive. It just really, it's so visual. In addition to being, it takes you over not only in what you're taking in your ears, but you're also imagining it in your mind. I mean, it really envelops a couple of your senses.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, it kind of gives you a chill. It does.
Yeah. Since I guess we don't have any phone calls at the moment, I'd like to just move on to the next pair of songs. This is the same song, like Tom Dooley, interpreted two very different ways. Anne Briggs was a young woman in the early 60s who began singing traditional British folk songs, although she wasn't of the tradition. She was considered one of the better singers of traditional songs in Britain. And I've kept about five verses of her singing the song and then go into a version that was recorded in 1969 or 1970 as a rock and roll song by a group that specialized in turning traditional songs into rock songs and did it extremely well. And this is a song I'll be concentrating on during my library talk next Wednesday. In fact, I'll be handing out the lyrics so people can hear the whole story. This is an incredible ballad. The shortest version runs about 8 minutes. As I said, there's a 22-minute version if you put all the verses together. I'll try as quickly as possible to give listeners an idea of what's going on here. An incredibly handsome man, a knight, goes riding in the woods, and he falls off his horse for some reason. And the little people, the fairies, whatever you call them, capture him. But in the process of this, they've captured him, but they let him sort of under house arrest, still remain in his garden or whatever. And he entices a daughter of a young nobleman to come in and visit him, and there's this blank spot in the song where something intimate happens. And the next thing you know, she's back at home, and her father's saying, "My goodness, daughter, you go with child. You're pregnant. You'd better marry the man." And she said, "Well, I've got this problem. I can't because he's in custody of the fairies." And so she goes running back to him and says, "What am I going to do? You in these days, this is the year 1100, you don't get pregnant and have a child out of wedlock." And he said, "You can save me. There's one thing you can do to save me is that the fairies are having a big parade into the gates of hell, and they're going to offer me as a tithe to the devil. Since I was once human, they don't value me as much as they value themselves. So you can wait at the gate of hell, and when you see me coming, I'll be on the white horse. You must run up to this horse, grab me off the horse, and hold me to your bosom no matter what happens." And he said, "I will go through horrible changes." And this is something that's very common in folk music. "I will become molten iron. I will become a horrible lizard. I will become a bear. I will become all these horrible things that you can't stand. But if you prove your love by holding on to me, you will break the enchantment, and I will be your lover forever and your husband. And the fairies won't be able to claim me." And so this is one of these songs you get so involved with the plot because you're going to, is it really going to happen? is he really going to, you know, make it? Because even if you heard the song 100 times, the tension still builds. Is it going to really happen? Is love going to win out? And this is one of those songs that says love can win. And so I thought if we have time, we can listen to it.
Yeah, we've got time.
"Lady Margaret, Lady Margaret was sewing at the seam. And she's all dressed in black, and the thought come in her head to run in the woods. To pull flowers to flower a hat, me boys, to pull flowers to flower a hat.
So she hoisted up her petticoat a bit above the knee, and so nimbly she run over the ground, and when she come in the merry green woods, well, she pulled them branches down, me boys. Well, she pulled them branches down. Suddenly she spied a fine young man. He's standing by a tree. He says, how dare you pull them branches down without the leave of me, my dear? Without the leave of me. Well, she says, this little wood, oh, it is me very own. Me father gave it to me. I can pull these branches down without the leave of thee, young man. Oh, without the leave of thee. And he took her by the milk-white hand, and by the grass-green sleeve. He pulled her down at the foot of a bush, and he never once asked to leave me, boys. No, he never once asked to leave. And when it was done, she twisted about to ask her true love's name, but she nothing heard and she nothing saw, and all the woods grew dim, and all the woods grew dim.
But tonight is Halloween, and the fairy folk ride. Those that would their true love win,
and there we go. We see the differences there and the similarities in Fairport Convention with Sandy Denny. I don't think she was with Fairport Convention for a very long time, was
their
she?
There was somebody before her in Fairport, and then she was with them for about 3 years, and then that was it, and she became her own. She became quite a star, and then she died very young in 1977 under sad circumstances. And she left behind a family, but she was considered one of the finest of all the British pop singers of that period. And
this era saw a revival of traditional British music, but it was put into a rock form.
In fact, even Led Zeppelin, if you listen to Stairway to Heaven, you will hear several lines that are taken from British folk songs. So it really wove into that whole thing. In fact, Led Zeppelin did record a couple of traditional folk songs on one of their early albums. So it's something that, in fact, this version of Tam Lin, the rock version, is what made me go back and look up the historical traditional version, because I was so fascinated by it.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Rich Warren, host of the Midnight Special. Next Wednesday, August 26th, he'll be at the Champaign Public Library at 7 o'clock to present a program looking at folk music, traditional folk music, a millennium of folk music, looking at some very old folk tunes. My name is Celeste Quinn. We have a caller on line one in Champaign County. Good afternoon.
Hi. I wanted to also do a little pitch. I'm not gaining from this. I'm just a fan. But there's a group locally under the name CU Folk and Roots, and they're on the web at cufolkandroots.org. Are doing an event in September, but they have actually a fundraiser at your old stomping grounds, Rich, at Channing Murray from 2 to 8 this Sunday afternoon into the evening. Some local talent doing a fundraiser for the event that's going to be a two-day event in like four different venues, mainly in Urbana. Dennis Stromont's the only name that I can think of that's coming from out of town. So people can find the rundown for this benefit this weekend and also the information on the festival, which is coming up. I guess that's a name that might be used in Chicago, too, this Folk and Roots idea. just, I guess, a way of broadening it.
And again, where do we find all the details?
CUfolkandroots.org.
Okay.
And also, you mentioned Archie Greene earlier, and I'm trying to kick my computer into overdrive here so I can perhaps search. Maybe you can do this, Celeste. There is coming up shortly an Archie Greene memorial over at the Labor and Industrial
September Asian 14th.
Excuse me?
September 14th.
Okay, so that's coming up. If people want to hear some of his collaborators and friends talk about him and memorialize, there's a little singing involved. You may know the artist that's doing it.
I know Stephen Waite is coming, for one. He did banjo dancing. Archie was truly a great man, and it's a great loss. But he certainly helped me understand folk music a lot better.
He lived a long time, too.
Yes.
So, but he's good to memorialize. If I might shamelessly plug another thing, which is that one of the speakers, and I'm forgetting which one it is, it might be Ron Peters, who knew him in the day, wrote up his piece, and it's actually being published this week in a little journal called The Public Eye. So there's actually a bit of something around town for people to look for that collects one person's thoughts about Archie Greene. So I just thought, particularly since your association with Channing Murray, you might want to hear about this local folk revival. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call.
I wrote Archie's
afternoon.
Obituary for Sing Out magazine, as a matter of fact, should be in the next issue, I think. So.
Okay. So to wrap up here this afternoon,
play Michael Cooney just to show that political music goes back quite a ways in folk music. This song is from about 210 years ago, and we don't know who wrote it, but this is a contemporary interpreter performing a song that's known by many names. He calls it Rigs of the Time, and it happened during the Napoleonic Wars, but if this doesn't sound like it's today's news, nothing does.
Okay.
No wonder that butter's a shilling a pound, seeing the rich farmer's daughters, how they ride up and down. When you ask them the reason, they cry, oh alas, there's a war on in France, and the cows have no grass. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the time, my boys. These are the rigs of the time. Tis of an old butcher, I must bring him in. Charges 2 bob a pound, and he thinks it's no sin. Puts his thumb on the scales and makes them go down, and he swears it's good weight, though it wants half a pound. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the time, my boys. These are the rigs of the time. Now next comes the publican, I must bring him in. Charges 4 pence a quart, and he thinks it's no sin. When he brings in the quart, well, the measure is short. The top of the pot is popped off with the froth. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the time, my boys. These are the rigs of the time. Now the very best plan that I ever did find was to puff them all off on a huge gale of wine. And when they got up on a cloud, it would burst, and the biggest old rascal come tumbling down first. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the time, my boys. These are the rigs of the time.
And there we go. There you have it. Michael Cooney, Rigs of the Time, a traditional tune, the author unknown.
And if you want to hear my favorite traditional song, you'll have to come to the library next Wednesday because we didn't have time to play it. So.
Okay, very good. Rich Warren will be at the Champaign Public Library for a free program open to the public August 26th, 2009. He'll present a program at 7 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library. Any opportunity for singing along?
I don't think we'll be singing because I can't carry a tune. But
You've got another event.
Yeah, I'm
also
hosting and producing a folk festival for WFMT for the Midnight Special on Sunday, September 20th from 3 to 7 o'clock at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, featuring Kathy Mattea, the Austin Lounge Lizards, Haynes and Layton, John McCutcheon, Claudia Schmidt, Michael Smith, Randall Williams. All these people are going to be performing a whole variety of different kinds of music, an all-day affair this coming September 20th at 3 o'clock in Skokie. Hope you can go to the Midnight Special website at midnightspecial.org to find out more information.
And we hope you'll tune in for the Midnight Special Saturday afternoons here on WILL Radio. Also, thanks to our second caller this afternoon who called in about the folk and roots organization in Champaign-Urbana. And their website is CU, as in Champaign-Urbana, CU Folk and Roots.org, and they've got a lot of things coming up. It looks like they've got a full calendar, so lots of things to do in terms of folk music. Okay, well, there we've got to wrap it up. We're out of time. Too bad. We'll just have to have you back.
It's always my pleasure.
Okay, Rich Warren. It is 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from Kansas City and Chicago. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you much, Celeste. Before we get started with the settlement prices, just a reminder that during the closing mark report this afternoon, we'll talk with Chip Flory and Roger Bernard as long as they both call in. They're out in the fields on that Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. It is their last day. They did post some numbers from Illinois last night, and Roger Bernard will have a complete look at what Pro Farmer found in the corn and soybean fields across the state of Illinois. And then we'll discuss with Chip Flory what he's finding in Iowa. Roger there as well. Chip, I think, has already made his way into Minnesota, and they'll wrap that up tonight, give some numbers out. And on Friday's Commodity Week, Chip Flory, that's Saturday's Commodity Week, we record on Friday at 4:30, Chip Flory will be our guest. So we'll get a look at what the tour numbers were, and then they massage those a bit and have some Pro Farmer numbers, and Chip will talk about those as well. That's during Commodity Week. You can hear it all right here on this radio station or visit our website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Here the way the numbers settled in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon from the wheat pit. Soft bread, a high today of $4.71 and a quarter, a low at $4.62 and a quarter, and a settlement price at $4.69, 3 cents higher. December, $4.98 and three quarters, the high, the low at $4.89 and a half, settled at $4.96 and a half, up three. In the March contract, $5.17 and three quarters, the high, the low at $5.09 and a quarter. Settled at $5.15 and a half, up 2 and three quarters in the May futures in the wheat pit. $5.28 and three quarters, the high, the low at $5.21 and a quarter. The settlement price at $5.27 and three quarters, up 3 cents. From Kansas City, hard red settled September at $4.98 and three quarters, 1 1/2 cents higher. Back in the corn pit in Chicago now, September contract, $3.21 and a half, the high. Low at $3.16 and a half, settled $3.18 and a half, a penny and a half lower. December futures down 3 1/2 cents, $3.28 and three quarters, the high, the low at $22 and three quarters. December corn settled $3.24 a bushel, down 3 1/2 cents. March contract $3.42, the high, the low at $36 and a quarter, settled at $3.37 and a quarter, 4 cents lower. And the May corn at $3.51 and a quarter, top bottom at $45 and a half, settled $3.46 and three quarters. Down 3 3/4. July futures, $3.60 and a quarter, the high, the low at $54 and three quarters. Settlement price for July corn at $3.55 and a quarter, down 3 3/4. In the December 2010 contract, a high today at $3.78, a low at $3.72 and a half. Settlement price 4 1/4 lower at $3.73. That for the December corn of next year. September oat futures at $2.02 and a half. Settlement price down 3/4 of a cent. December $2.16 and a half in the oats, a half cent lower. Soy complex now, nearby beans, $10.07 and a quarter, the high, the low at $9.93 and three quarters. Settlement price $9.99 and a quarter cents, up 2 1/4. November bean futures, $9.68 and a half, the high, the low at $52. Settlement price at $9.57, a penny lower. And the January contract, $9.72, the high, the low at $55 and a half, a settlement price at $9.59 and a half, down 3 1/2 cents. March contract in the bean pit, $9.70, the high, the low at $56, settlement price at $9.59 and a half, the same as the January, down 5 1/4. And the May contract, $9.70 and a half, the high, the low at $53, settlement price at $9.57, down 6 1/4. November bean futures, 10 cents lower today, $9.45, the high, the low at $9.21 and a quarter. This is November 2010 contract, so next year's, not this year's, $9.25, the settlement price, down a dime in the November 2010 soybean contract. September soybean meal, $327.60 a ton, the high. Low at 316, settlement price at 326.90, up $10.60. October bean meal, 290.40, up $2.80. September soybean oil, 36.35, the high, the low at 35.76. Settled at 35.80, down 31 cents, and the October futures there at 35.99, finished down 32 cents. Again, during the closing mark report this afternoon, we'll get a complete update of the findings from the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Roger Bernard will join us from the eastern leg, Chip Flory from the western leg, and of course, our regular Thursday analyst, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, will join us. He's traveling to do today as well. In Ohio. So an all-travel kind of day on the Closing Mark Report comes up in 9.5 minutes right here. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In Chicago at the Merck today, August live cattle. The high for that contract today was 85.05, the low 84.70, the settlement 84.80, down 2.5. October, 89.02.5, the high 88.60, the low 88.82.5, the settlement that up 15. December, 88.70, the high 88.20, the low 88.60, the settlement up 27.5. February, 88.70, the high 88.17.5, the low 88.50, the settlement that was up 32.5. August feeder cattle 101.20, the high $100.95, the low 101.05, the settlement no change there. September 101.50, the high $100.90, the low 101.10, the settlement down a nickel. October 101.37.5, the high $100.75, the low, the settlement 101.20 unchanged. November 101.75, the high 101.10, the low, the settlement 101.30 down 10. Lean hogs were higher today. October lean hogs 47 even. That was the high. The low 45.85. The settlement 46.92.5, up 117.5. December 46.20, the high. The low 45 even. The settlement 46.15, up 152.5. February 52.65, the high 51.60. The low 52.57.5. The settlement up 122.5. April 56.75, the high 55.85, the low, the settlement 56.57.5, up 85. And August pork bellies, here's what the screen says. The high 46 even, there's no low price given, but the settlement is listed as 46 even, and it's listed as a change of up 50 cents. The Dow is currently up 51 at 93.30. The NASDAQ is up 15 at 1984. The S&P 500 8 higher at 1,005. Nearby crude in New York down 7 cents a barrel at 72.35. 1 minute before 2 o'clock. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. WILL is a listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director. The producer for the afternoon magazine is Harriet Williamson. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, mostly cloudy with widely scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 74 in far northwestern Illinois to 84 in southern Indiana. Tonight, a few lingering showers and isolated thunderstorms during the evening, otherwise partly to mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 58 in northern Illinois to 68 in southeastern Indiana. The outlook for tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, widely scattered showers possible during the afternoon. Highs ranging from 65 in northwestern